Hello, friends. Welcome once again to the Perfect Bound Podcast. This is a podcast all about anything and everything comic books and comics related, brought to you by the Panel Jumper and Comic Extension. My name is Ben. With me, as always, is Chris Casso.
Hello.
Cole Hornaday.
Good evening.
Good evening. And Nicole Lamb.
And welcome.
And welcome. Well, it's nice to be here on this smoky evening here in Seattle, Washington. Our air quality is worse than Beijing these days. I blame Canada because it's coming from BC wildfires. But like I've always said, I'd rather be in the smoky haze than have my house burned down from a wildfire. So
that's right.
I'll take it for as long as it'll last.
Been without water for how long? Without rain for 53 days?
Yeah, something like that. New record for us.
Yeah.
It's going to rain. It's going to rain on Sunday, and Sunday I'm actually having softball practice, and I'm like, you know what? I want it to rain, because I want to be outside when it rains.
Mm-hmm. All right. Get pictures.
Yeah, indeed. I'm not going to get my phone wet. Anyway.
Have someone else get pictures.
If they have an Android, that is one of those
Look, Ben,
water
all I wanted was pictures, okay? I'm not asking for the moon.
Hey guys.
Hey.
So,
what's happening this week at the Comics Dungeon? Anything new and exciting for the week of April 14th?
Well,
August. They start with A's.
Wow. That's an A.
Rough. Yeah, it's fine.
We are in the middle of our anniversary sale, and we also just finished we had our auction charity auction down at the Latona Pub earlier this week, and it was very successful. It's going to fund a whole bunch of grants going to classrooms that need comic books. And sales been going on for a week, and it's been really, really good. It's we've cleared through a lot of stuff, and it's boosted every day.
We have a book club coming up on the 18th where we'll be discussing My Favorite Thing is Monsters, and it is open to everybody. It'll be at 7 until 8, and then we'll have a ladies book club coming up where we'll be discussing A Wrinkle in Time, and that's the first Sunday in September, which is the 3rd, and we meet from 6 to 7, so...
Great.
Some things to coming up.
Yeah, cool.
People are really psyched for A Wrinkle in Time due to that trailer. So
yeah, that was my favorite book as a child, so I'm looking forward to revisiting it in graphic novel form.
Excellent.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I can see up there right next to A Wrinkle in Time are two copies of My Favorite Thing is Monsters. Is that the most copies we've ever had in store at the same time?
I think we have
oh, there's
three
one over there.
Right now,
I think we've had like maybe five or six or something like that, but they go really fast, and then they're hard to restock
because
it keeps going to new prints.
Yeah.
What printing is it up to?
This is past three now.
Yeah.
Wow, that's great.
Yeah.
And there's a new one that's coming out soonish.
Is that... Do you think it's because it got the exposure it did on the news and on the interweb and such?
Tons of exposure, ton of word of mouth, NPR, and then just a lot of people giving good reviews online. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's going to have to win like every major award this next year. So.
Yep.
Cool. All right. Well, that's what's happening at the Comics Dungeon. If you want to find out more, friend them on Facebook or go to comicsdungeon.com. Mm-hmm. In other news this week, there's quite a bit of news this week. Jonathan Hickman pretty much confirmed what everybody was thinking, and that's that Marvel canceled the Fantastic Four due to their beef with the Fox Studios' perpetual license while they keep making films.
Yeah. And doing them poorly.
I know. Like, I want a good Fantastic Four movie.
There's one note from there. I think it might have been from like John Barber or something. It's just like, well, it doesn't help when you have three utterly horrible bleep, bleep, bleep movies or something.
Well, I thought that was the whole... That Marvel, the publisher, had just given up, or maybe even... Disney had said, look, we can't keep associating with the poor quality of this. Besides that, it's sort of like dragging down the Marvel Universe, Cinematic Universe name.
I wouldn't be surprised if some suit was like, we have to distance ourselves.
Yeah,
precisely. And, you know, many of us have been proposing this as a truth for a while now, but... and I was combing through some of the articles going from... I think Ben took his high points from the Bleeding Cool article, but there also was a link through the Newsrama article. But we had a conversation about this like over a year ago, and Chris, I remember you saying, no, that's not being pulled because of the poor movies, and it's being canceled because the sales of the comic book are just poor. Do you still feel that way?
I think it's probably a combo.
Yeah.
Six of one, half of the other. Or
because
the
definitely Tom Brevoort is pulling this company line that it's like, you know, he said, Fantastic Four is a title and a concept that has a lot of built-in historical importance in the Marvel Universe, but to the readership of today, it doesn't resonate the same way that the X-Men, Avengers, or the Guardians of the Galaxy does right now. And I kind of had to snort about that because, you know, I think part of our conversation was also, well, Fantastic Four is flagging as much as X-Men is because mm-hmm. they're old white guy comic books. Do you still feel that way?
Well, I still think that there's a note in, I think, the Newsrama article mm-hmm. where I can't remember if it's Hickman, but one of them just said, it just depends on the people you put on it and the direction they go. Right. So, I mean, that's a big thing. It's just that like the last couple runs were just kind of heading downward sales-wise mm-hmm. anyway. That's never an excuse to just straight up completely kill an entire franchise, I think. You could take a vacation.
Yeah.
Especially not when it's the first family of superhero.
Right, right. But then there's the notes of, was it Ike Perlmutter or one of the guys are just like, take down all the posters. They didn't want anything, you know. So.
I don't even want to see it.
Yeah, I don't want to look at you.
It's like daddy has left us. Tear up the pictures.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So, I mean, it definitely gives you that impression that there's more of just that the wrong people in the offices at the wrong time making the bad decisions. Mm-hmm. But I also can't completely blame them because it's like, I would kind of want that distance. I think it's been long enough. They're going to probably milk that distance longer than they should.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we'll see if they can get off with any new media that fixes it. And then maybe they'll be like, oh, bring it back.
So I'm kind of feeling half justified, half not, because part of our discussion was that, hey, the title is part of my takeaway from my conversation with you days gone by was the title is tired. Mm-hmm. It's uninspired. And the creative teams are as well. So, hey, what better excuse than to take it off the stands than the movies are poor and we don't want to have to associate with this flagging franchise.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, and I think we need to go back and review this episode mm-hmm. because I think you said the same similar thing about the X-Men, but what keeps a title buoyant then? Because I can't disagree with you where the X-Men mm-hmm. and the Fantastic Four are concerned. But
I still think that even at their lowest, X-Men sales have always been stronger than Fantastic Four.
Okay.
So I think they may have just still been like, we can't really get rid of the X-Men because they've always been, like the 90s, they were mm-hmm. definitely like the biggest part of the company.
Right.
Fantastic Four can't really tout that for that mm-hmm. more recent timeline. So I think there's just a little bit more marketability on the X-Men for them
yep.
as a whole because that you have so many more mutants in play that you can sell more T-shirts for mm-hmm. than the four. You're not going to sure. be selling too many Invisible Women T-shirts, okay. unfortunately.
But let's not overlook the fact that Dan Didio, opportunist that he is setting up this comic book at DC called The Terrifics, which he's pretty much touting as being a new Fantastic Four on the DC side of the fence that's going to be comprised of it's going to follow the metal event. It's going to be Mr. Terrific, Plastic Man, Metamorpho, and Phantom Girl. Mm-hmm. That just seems so contrived. I mean, I'm going to read it, you know, because mm-hmm. I'm curious to see what they're going to try to do. It's like, can you capture Fantastic Four magic? And you know, and I have to admit the Fantastic Four magic is questionable, but I would like to see what they do.
Yeah, it's Jeff Lemire, so I actually think it could be pretty entertaining. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And he has been a regularly inspired writer. I think mm-hmm. he's done a really good job of breathing new life into other properties because he's a fresh young mind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's who I would have actually liked to have seen just go do the Fantastic Four.
Absolutely.
Like, if you had to make up a list of people who would have been worth the effort to try and follow suit after Hickman,
mm-hmm.
probably be him, maybe... Actually, I don't have anybody else in mind.
I think Lemire could do something interesting because he's done some of his indie stuff has had some interesting concepts in it that mm-hmm. he could bring to superhero-dom.
I actually would like to see Zdarsky do that title.
I knew you were going to say that.
Yeah.
I totally knew you were going to say that.
Well, his Spider-Man's actually been like the best Spider-Man title in the past like 10 years. So.
Excellent.
So, yeah.
I don't think they've said what they're going to do, like the ultimate end. Like the Thing and the Human Torch are on other titles currently. But traditionally, when they cancel a book, do they kill everybody off, or do they just like put them in mothballs?
No,
it just depends on what's happening.
Yeah, it varies.
Just kind of walk off into the sunset.
Yeah,
that was the interesting thing about the article that you shared, the Newsarama part,
right,
where they pointed out, and I kind of had this feeling, but it makes perfect sense, that Secret Wars was changed to become the final Fantastic Four story.
Really?
Yeah. There's a line in the Newsarama part of the links where they're basically like, yeah, we actually had to completely kind of take a step to the left and alter this so that it would be like the final Reed Victor story.
Oh, was that why Tom Brevoort told that extra? Because there was some scheduling and some release schedule things that had changed about it.
Here's the quote you were referring to. Tom Brevoort told Newsarama in January 2016, after the conclusion of Secret Wars, a crossover that took the Richards's and by proxy the FF off the board, it's sort of taken for granted. It's sort of been seen as a holdover from another era, which isn't to say that the characters aren't great or concepts aren't important or that it isn't a linchpin in the Marvel Universe. It's just the facts of the world and the zeitgeist of today. I don't think that really addresses what Chris was talking about. But anyway, Fantastic Four hasn't been at the forefront.
Yeah, so, and for those who don't know about Secret Wars, the family went off to like rebuild galaxies and worlds and stuff like that. So they're off sciencing somewhere. So that's how they've written them to be.
Was it Mark Waid called them? Something Imaginauts.
Imaginaut,
wasn't that his thing? His tag for him? Because
I know there was another book called like Imaginauts, so maybe.
Yeah. No, that's not the right word. It's something knots. Hmm. Anyway.
So say goodbye to the Fantastic Four if you read that title. Hold it close.
Well, and I'm actually looking forward to the day when it does come back, and maybe a couple of years, but I think that will actually be quite an inspired book when it finally comes. I'm sorry, Nicole, I cut you off.
I said, in the meantime, you can just read a lot of other titles, the older Fantastic Four stuff. There's a lot of good stories.
Yeah, go back and reread like the Mark Waid Micro Wingo run.
Mm-hmm. That was great stuff.
So you.
And those are good family stories. You know, they were a whole family. You know, the kids were involved.
Especially that part where they sent Franklin to hell and Dr. Doom had flesh armor.
Yes.
Woo-hoo! Yeah. All righty. Well, all right.
And
so,
on that note.
And moving on.
I think Ben wants to move on.
In sad news, to get to this lovely story. No, in sad news, Florence Steinberg has passed away. She was known as Fabulous Flo in the Marvel offices. Mm-hmm. They claim that she was the gal Friday there at the office, but she was one of the original Marvel knots with Stan Lee and Jack Kirby.
The original bullpen.
Yeah, the original bullpen. Heidi McDonald wrote an article for comicsbeat.com, which is where I got this information. And in it is embedded a YouTube video from, I think was a record, The Voices of Marvel. Mm-hmm. And you can hear Stan and Jack and Florence kind of like doing a podcast. It's really kind of fun.
Cool.
But she was one of the original Marvel staffers, and the author had a connection to Flo, and writes in one of the final paragraphs, Flo is a lot more than just a gal Friday at Marvel, as anyone who's survived in that world would have to be. Mm. She was a feminist who stood up for her own ideas. And she goes on to say she's grieving that we've lost her, as everyone knew her is. But give her the place she deserves. Flo inspired her as a woman in comics, and she'll never forget her kindness, her insights, and her one-of-a-kind personality. Is there like, and there's a cover of a comic called Fabulous Flo. It's behind the scenes of comics, and I guess it's an old Marvel title when they just.
Are you sure? I've never heard of that.
I thought that was just like a fan piece of art.
It might have been a fan
piece. Is it a fan piece of art?
However,
that's how little I know about Marvel's history.
There was a what if.
50s.
It was like what if number 5 or 6. And it was a really goofy kind of fan service story about what if the Marvel bullpen had been irradiated by the cosmic rays and became the Fantastic Four. So Flo is Sue. And Stan Lee is Reed. And Jack Kirby is who?
The thing, maybe?
And I can't remember who was Johnny Storm. Mm. But see, you know, these are all people that you don't really know, but you do know because they make your dream, for that generation, they made your dreams come true in comic book form.
Mm-hmm.
And Stan Lee, to his credit, he created that sort of fandom. You know, he created the Friends of Old Marvel, the Friends of Foom. Friends of
Friends
Old Marvel. Yeah, that's right. Two O's. Got Foom. It. You know, he helped establish that sort of fandom that sort of permeated the psyches of young impressionable minds. And I think it's one of the ways that people knew who Flo was, mm-hmm. you know, because he would talk about her in his soapbox and in comics like that. She'd make appearances.
Yeah. There's a really cool part that I didn't know in the article that you sent, that she self-published a comic. It's either Big Apple or Red Apple Comics, but it was considered a bridge between the underground and the alternative movements. Hmm. And she had like a lot of classic mainstream Marvel illustrators doing like adult stuff in there. So that was a neat bit of information.
Big Apple Comics.
Big Apple Comics. Yeah. Yeah.
Was that published by Marvel? Because I know Marvel did this weird thing where they tried to do underground style comics in the 70s.
They credited it as her being self-published.
Wow.
So it was something that Stan and Jack never did. So, so she went above and beyond on that.
And that's comics with an X, right?
Yeah, comics with an X. Mm-hmm. Big Apple Comics.
I think it has like some Al Williamson in it and just a bunch of other great talents.
Cool.
So yeah.
I'm going to go find that.
All right. So moving on. Karen Berger, who actually in 1993 founded the Vertigo imprint for DC, is creating a new publisher. And we've even, we didn't talk about this, but we talked about one of the titles on our Facebook page because Anthony Bourdain is going to be one of the writers. But this is going to be a new line for, I'm trying to find, it's going to be for Dark Horse. And it's going to be Burger Books, is what it's called.
Burger Books.
Burger Books.
Big Burger Books.
Yeah, I'm going to have a problem keeping track because there's the other imprint over at IDW from somebody else that's from Vertigo.
Yep.
The Black Crown Books.
Yes.
Right.
And so it's like two separate ladies who are Vertigo and Illumina.
What was her name?
We talked about that.
Oh, and they also look like Vertigo stuff.
Yeah.
And kind of like what Young Animals is emulating right now, the DC imprint. So it's like, it's very confusing.
My brain's going to start crossing here, but this one had, let's see, I think that they announced that they were also going to have reprint something from Dave Gibbons.
Yeah, they are.
The original. The original, so they're reprinting the mod, that.
It's the graphic novel about the mod gang and in the 60s in London.
And then there's The Seeds, which has an artist I really like.
David Aja?
Yeah, Aja's great. He used to do Iron Fist, the old Fraction Brubaker Iron Fist issues.
Those are great.
Was it Shelley Bond?
Yes,
the other
Shelley Bond.
Okay, so she's the one who's doing Black Crown at IDW.
So was she not a protege of Karen Berger? Didn't she take up for Karen when Karen left?
Yeah,
and then... and then I think Berger had to sign a non-compete, and that's why she wasn't editing the kind of books that she had, you know, risen to stardom with. But that non-compete was over, and then she's
everyone's free.
Like gangbusters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Hungry Ghost is the other comic by Anthony Bourdain and Joel Rose. Incognegro Renaissance by Matt Johnson and Warren Pleece.
That's not a new title. That title's been from another publisher, right?
Yeah, DC did have that a while back. Vertigo did.
Okay.
Maybe this is new material under that title, but maybe it's just a reprint because the originals is just a reprint.
Because you forget that a lot of these titles are
Renaissance
creator owned. Like, you know, Saucer Country is getting a new run over at IDW.
Right.
You know?
Oh, Saucer Country. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's right.
For example.
That's right.
Matahari?
Yeah. Matahari. We already talked about The Seeds by David Aja. And I want to say Aja. Is it pronounced Aja or Aha?
Oh, he's the fellow who did the covers for the Scarlet Witch.
Yes.
Yeah, those are ice. Awesome.
I think it's Aja, but I have always been wrong with every name I ever pronounce.
And ever, amen.
And I will continue to, unapologetically. And,
Seeds is also...
I'm sorry.
Unapologetically.
Written by Anne Nocenti. Speaking of us just off topic of screwing up names, I was thinking about just putting together a supercut of times that we screw up a person's name for the best of episode that went out last week.
Mostly going
to be me.
But,
Coates.
But,
by the way, thank you for that email. I can't remember who that was, but thank you. You set me straight.
It was a listener.
Yeah.
Was it a listener that corrected us?
Somebody corrected us.
Yeah.
It was why Wakanda? Why can't she say his name right? Well, it was in the email. It was great.
Yeah. And also, long before then, I heard an interview from one of Ta-Nehisi's friends on some NPR show, and I'm like, oh, that's how you pronounce his name. And if anybody's gonna know how to pronounce his name, it's gonna be a
childhood friend. yeah.
So anyway, look for Burger Books from DC.
Burger Books.
And here's something fun. All right, so Henry Cavill is filming one of the Mission Impossible movies. And
you guys, I thought this was an Onion thing when I first saw it on the web. And, seriously.
And they got to reshoot some scenes for Justice League because Hollywood, and this is pretty common, but Paramount, who produces Mission Impossible, is not letting him shave his mustache. So Warner has to pay out the nose to digitally remove Henry Cavill's Tom Selleck-like mustache.
My friends, do they charge $1 million mustache?
Do they charge by follicle?
Oh my goodness! Yeah.
You know, as somebody who's done like that kind of motion tracking, that's it's not that hard to do these days. But making it look like it's not a computer effect is the hard part.
That stuff's going to be on HD. It's got to be immaculate.
It's going to be more than HD, man. Yeah.
I don't like HD.
Coming out in IMAX.
Right.
I would prefer it so much because when Superman resurrected in the comics, he had the long mullet.
Oh, that's right.
What if he just came out with a Ned Flanders mustache? And then he could be in character with Superman. He could be like, "Hi, ho, everybody."
You know, the article at birthmoviesdeath.com had a picture of Henry Cavill in the Superman outfit with the mustache. And I'm like, that's the new Superman look. I want that to be what Superman looks.
This Disco King mustache.
You did say Tom Selleck, and that's like the peak of mustaches. Yeah. He's not there. I just want to say he does not.
No.
He does not compete with Tom Selleck.
All right.
No.
It's subpar.
He does not hold a candle.
It's acceptable. It's not Tom Selleck level. Mm-hmm. But it's still really expensive.
So we need to establish a mustache meter.
We do.
And
the 70s is going to be where most of the meter gets to the highest point.
Superheroes don't wear mustaches.
They should.
Bad guys wear mustaches. Aww. You know, think about it. Good guys, superheroes, they're usually clean shaven because that, you know. Because
it's the best.
What are you trying to say to me?
Two beards are at the table right now. Just want to tell our.
I didn't shave today, but I shaved yesterday. Actually, to your point, Cole, because I have the quiz time questions for today, I almost did a quiz time on superheroes with mustaches.
Oh.
But I couldn't, I didn't know who anybody wants.
You know what's a common thing? Not too common, but enough that I'm going to say it's common.
Okay. Let's make it common tonight.
I've had a handful of customers come in who only want to buy Silver Age Superman comics where he's growing a beard.
Yeah.
Because it happens from time to time. Because you get all those weird Silver Age stories where he went to, like, prehistoric era and couldn't shave his beard or something. Or he went off into space. So it's like bearded Superman is a thing that people hunt.
It's a sub-genre of collectibility. That's so funny.
Beard along with Super Dickory, you know. Any covers where Superman's an
Where
he's not nice.
Where he's not nice. Where he's where he's denying Aquaman water.
He's a big jerk.
Superman. He's mean.
So anyway, that's happening. When Justice League comes out, I do want to watch the movie and see if I can ping which scenes
I wanted to be at the discussion table when Joss Whedon says, "We got to go back and reshoot this and this and this and." Oh, and we got to do this because Cavill's got a mustache.
You know, we weren't going to bring him back, but,
you know, you guys didn't let me do my Wonder Woman movie, so here's the finger. And the mustache.
All right, moving on.
The mustache is the finger.
That's what, isn't that what I said?
Isn't that one in the same? Moving on.
No, not yet.
This is kind of old news, but I hadn't seen it till recently at San Diego Comic-Con. Noah Hawley teased that he's developing a Doctor Doom movie. I thought this would appeal to you.
Mm.
So nothing's been confirmed, but I want to know from the panel, who do you want to see play Doctor Doom?
Well, I thought that they said that the person that they've already cast is Mads Mikkelsen.
I saw that name, but I didn't see it in terms of that person being cast.
Mads Mikkelsen has the depth, but he's not stentatorian enough. He's got to have bombast. He's got to have poise and arrogance, but he's also got to be a great, pompous windbag like Kenneth Branagh.
Oh, so is your vote for Kenneth Branagh?
Yeah, if he was taller. Yeah. We can give him platforms.
Chris, counterpoint, go. Yes. No,
I kind of like the idea of the creepier, quieter Mads Mikkelsen.
Mm. He's just Chris, but he's just too ostentatious.
Yeah, yeah. No, and I don't want to argue.
He wears a metal mask for pity's sake.
I don't want to argue that too much. Here's the thing: the guy who played him in the bad movies, the guy from Nip Tuck, mm-hmm. I actually thought he was a good choice.
He was terrific. Yeah.
I just thought that was a horrible. Once they put the mask on him and gave him powers, I was like, what happened?
Oh, wait, you are you talking about
this is like the Jessica Alba?
Oh, yeah. No, I retract my that he was
terrific. Yeah, I never saw the last one, so.
Well, no, the last one is what we're talking about. No, yeah. But the guy that was in the Corman one is actually pretty good.
I don't remember who
he was. Barely understand what he's saying because they haven't weeped up his voice.
Yeah.
Because he's talking through the mask.
Yeah, that's part of the trick, too. That happened in the Jessica Alba ones where they put the mask on and they did something weird with the dubbing of his voice. I'm just like, now I don't care anymore. Yeah, Kenneth Branagh.
Oh, someone of that caliber. Somebody of an RSC background who knows how to do the bombast and be theatrical. I've always seen Dr. Doom as being very theatrical.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if Brian Blessed's still working. He'd be old. He's too old if he's still alive.
He'd be in a mask. I mean, it depends on how you're going to tell the story, right? Are you going to tell it from...
I don't know the Dr. Doom canon very well. I'm just thinking of old British actors who are very bombastic.
Well, apparently you can make people young again. So.
Oh, yes, you can.
We can just hire dead people right now.
Sure. Well, no, you can do it while they're still alive, but just make them young if they've got, film...
Stick little green dots on their face and go for it.
So if you have any idea for who you want to see play Dr. Doom, email us at perfectbombpodcast@gmail.com. Moving on, this kind of disappointed me. The Dark Tower movie, which I was so looking forward to, is not getting very good reviews. But what I didn't know, and I guess this is true, they're squeezing all the books into one movie?
Wait, what?
I saw someone on Facebook today, and I don't know if he's actually seen the movie, but he was like, okay, imagine, so here's the Dark Tower. Imagine if they try to take every single Harry Potter book and make one movie about it. You take away Ron and Hermione. You know, Harry and Dumbledore have a fight at the very end, but they throw their wands down and they just have a fist fight. And he went through this whole thing, and I'm like, is that what they did to the Dark Tower film? Is it they just squeezed everything into 95 minutes?
Why would you bother doing it, then?
Precisely.
Like, maybe what would be the point?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Other than they
just
didn't...
Just to have the name out there?
Yeah. Maybe they had to hold on to the property.
I know. Yeah. It's a licensing issue.
It's a licensing thing, you guys. The best Dark Tower film is in the next world.
Yeah. It was actually made by Roger Corman in 1982
with a $300 million budget.
Maybe there was just somebody on staff like me that was just like, we got to get the lobsters in there somehow.
Oh, man. Yeah. Get them
I know. Let's just condense
there.
Them all. Yeah. We'll get like
chop off the fingers.
1 minute of sweet lobster action in there, and we're good.
And Blaine the Train. Don't forget Blaine the Train. Who's the badger? What's the badger's name?
I don't remember that.
The Billy Bumbler? What's his name?
I don't recall. I read these books when I was in junior high.
Oh, I thought you read them more recently.
No, I'm reading the comics, but I don't think I've gotten to Billy the Badger yet.
No, if you say Badger three or four times, the name magically appears.
So anyway, I'm still going to see the Dark Tower, and I'm probably going to enjoy it because I don't have the books to reference it against anymore. Mm-hmm. But... Anyway, it's kind of disappointing because we've been so looking forward to this for the longest time.
I keep seeing the previews, and McConaughey versus Idris Elba actually seems like a pretty interesting dynamic, sure. just acting-wise. Yeah. Like, I've seen McConaughey do, like, a range of stuff, and I think Idris can be good for that role. I don't really know anything about Dark Tower, so I would be coming at it with, like, absolutely no context. And I kind of also think I'd come at it with the way that I did with the Nicolas Cage Ghost Rider movie, where I was like, I want to see a Flamin' Skull guy. And that was my expectation, and it happened. And so I was fine. So yeah, it's like I want to see the two fight and then I'd probably be good. So maybe lower your expectations
and
forget that you ever read a book.
Exactly. Well, I always do forget when I read books. But that's
a lot of hard work, Nicole.
Oh, I know. I know. So you had to choose whether or not that's a thing you could do.
That's what I went into watching Jurassic World. That's the mindset I had watching Jurassic World. It's like I don't really care about canon. I just want to see a monster movie.
Right? Like I just want to see some dinosaurs tear some stuff up.
I want to see some hot dino on dino action.
And
here.
You did.
I got that.
Yeah.
Okay. And finally today, DC's Legends of Tomorrow, which until I saw this article, I didn't even know it was a TV show. Does anybody watch this?
I keep forgetting that it's out.
I actually have them all in my Netflix queue because I need to get to them. But
I generally hear that it's miserable, but it's a train wreck you can't stop watching. that's also from the owner of the store, Scott, who generally really likes this DC stuff. But he's just sort of like, oh, it's so bad.
Oh,
so bad. So, yeah.
Well, they're being politically proactive. They say that in response to our current political climate and our current president, they are actually adding a Muslim character to the show.
Well, she's not a new character.
No, but they're bringing her over to the show.
Right. I mean, you know how far back she goes, right?
I do not, actually, but she...
back in my day, Ben Lawrence, there was a TV show called Shazam!
And it was an hour block, and they paired it up with ISIS.
The Mighty Isis.
Oh,
the Mighty
Isis. Yeah. Yes. And, my husband loves that.
And that was a new character that they... I do not believe that was a character originally created by DC. I think it was actually Filmation or the film company came up with it. But DC eventually wrangled the rights. And did they not introduce her in the comics as Black Adam's
wife?
Wife in the 52.
And
I was, and she's actually kind of a cool character.
She was, they did a really awesome arc with her, and they introduced like her brother who kind of became like part of the family,
right.
And they created a whole Black Adam family. They even had like an animal mascot who ate half of them, and it was really good.
But I do believe she was not originally a DC creation.
Though
when the rights, because I was reading about it, I was reading up on the Shazam TV show a couple months back. And anyway, if I'm incorrect in this, please somebody shoot us an email. Let me know. Deliver me from my ignorance.
They're bringing her back in the upcoming third season under her real name, Zari Adriana Tomaz, played by Tala Ash, who she says that there's representation is a big thing. And when she was growing up, she didn't see a lot of people like her.
Nope.
So it's a good thing that that she's in this show and is able to represent. And it's coming back for its third season on October 10th on the CW. If anybody watches TV... If I can't stream it, it doesn't exist to me, sadly,
same
these
here.
Days.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's the news for this week. We covered a bit, but there's always more. If you have something you want us to talk about, send us an email, perfectboundpodcast@gmail.com. And now let's get on to Book Report, everybody. And let's start with Nicole. What do you got for us?
I knew you were going to pick me first.
It's random every time.
Dun, 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 dun.
Unless you do quiz time, in which case you go first.
You actually have to make a quiz? Okay. So I read the new Redlands issue 1. This is actually written by Jordi Belair, who is the one that we talk about makes up our Voltron of creators.
She's everywhere.
The head or is she the torso? I can't remember.
I think she's the head.
So for those who haven't listened, there's a lot of people who are being very prolific in the comic industry right now, and we've created them to be a fake Voltron of epicness, and Jordi Belair is one of them. She's the writer and color artist on this. Vanessa R. Del Rey is the artist, so I'm assuming like the pencils and the inks. And Clayton Cowell is a letterer and part of production. And this is a Southern horror story that happens in the Redlands of Florida in 1977. And it starts right in the action. It looks like the sheriff's department was trying to lynch some witches, but they escaped because, you know, magic. And there's these... I guess it's like demons and witches and evil that's all around this area, and so you're in the fray. Like, there's a lot of people who are in the jail, and the police are trying to figure out how to deal with everything and trying to take out these witches. And meanwhile, like, some people are getting picked off, and eventually you do like meet the witches, and it's just, it's kind of just that action pack sort of first issue to get you acquainted with some of the characters. They focus a lot on the sheriff and his son. So I feel like he's going to be part of that story. I don't know how they're going to do a second issue, because it does seem like you're kind of almost at the end of the story, but maybe not. So either they're going to go back, or maybe they're going to continue with what happens after this madness, like do the demons take over or something like that. So it was an interesting issue. I'd say that the art style was kind of a mixture between like a clean Temple Smith and Riley Rossmo, because Ben Temple Smith likes to do color washes and stuff, and there's a lot of not that. There's just black and different contrasts, but it does have a scratchy feel to it, and there are some kind of more sepia tones and dark. It's very, very dark. I mean, it's happening in like the middle of the night as well. Almost a little bit of Matt Kint as well, like some of his like wispy humans. So if you like any of those people, you might want to check out Redlands just from the art alone. And the writing's very interesting. I think like an issue number two will really be telling like which direction this is going to go in. The only thing that I would say negatively about it is, I came in with an expectation of hoping to be a little creeped out, or, you know, have a little eeriness or something like that. I really want to get that out of my horror comics. And I didn't. It was like kind of just straightforward for me a little bit more. So that would be my only critique, is I didn't really get an eeriness. So perhaps I might get that as we go. A good barometer for me is the Harrow County series, because I read that first issue and it was really creepy and automatically like grabbed me in that way. And I thought it did horror very well. So we'll have to see how this goes as it unfolds. I'm excited that Jordy's getting to do other things with her creativeness. Mm-hmm. She's a very prolific colorist. So I'm very excited that she has her own title now.
Cool. As long as she doesn't stop being part of Voltron, we're fine.
Yeah, she's even Voltron in this, because she's doing the coloring and the writing. So, nice. Yeah.
All right, Redlands, issue one. Thanks, Nicole. Mm-hmm. Cole Hornaday, what do you got for us?
I just hope that some of these folks actually someday learn how you glorify them through these characterizations. It's kind of marvelous. Okay, well, I am going to... I think I'm going to review my last BPRD trade collection, because I think it's time to move on. So this is the, but fate is conspiring, and I will explain this down the road. So I read the latest collection of the BPRD, Hell on Earth Cometh the Hour, and this is collection number 15, gang. And this collects issues number, I think it's 143 to 147. We finally get to the end of the story, and the BPRD defeat the Agruhem and all the crawling chaos that has been destroying the earth. And we lose a couple of characters. And I have enjoyed this series, but I think I've expressed in the past that, gosh darn, I'm glad I'm not paying for it. Because I get these from the library. And these, you know, these collections are $19 a piece, and we're talking 15 of them thus far. And I read the individual issues, but I had to give up because I just couldn't. It was such a slow, plodding story. And I realized in reading this, that's a plus and a minus. It is a slow, plodding story, the way the threat of these paradimensional creatures are an infestation and a slow, plodding threat. So if that was, you know, Arcudi and Mike Mignola's creative impetus for telling these stories, then good on them. And we got to the end, and I'm like, oh, cool. Okay, we lost some characters. We got to a conclusion. The sun is coming out. All the creepy crawlies are almost all wiped out. And then I see the solicitation for BPRD, The Devil You Know, that starts this month. And I'm like, okay, guys, really, let's lay something to rest here at some point and move on. Because they're still gathering up characters that were not wiped out in Hell on Earth, and moving on with some other story that's still got to relate to the Agruhem and the rest of the Lovecraftian critters that are infesting the earth. I've enjoyed this series, but and I know it's not for everyone, and but it's getting a bit belabored, and I think I need to move on. And I wish they would move on too.
As long as it makes some money.
Yeah. Well, sometimes, you know, you kind of ask why, what is the driving force? Is that it? Is that why you guys keep doing it? That's too bad if it is.
Does it sell well? BPRD Hill on Earth?
We have a very, very dedicated amount of Mignola followers. So we have a very good base number of orders on that. Uh-huh. It's just that it keeps relaunching and it keeps getting more confusing.
Right.
Because there's like BPRD, there's Hellboy in the BPRD, there's BPRD flashbacks, there's one-shots, there's holiday specials. So I think we lose people over time because they're not willing to do the homework.
Cole's raising his hand.
Yeah.
So one of the things that I did not, one of the pluses about this series is the covers by Duncan Fedrego.
There you go, we're already starting.
Yeah. Duncan Fedrego and Lawrence Campbell. The covers are truly marvelous, but you know, they're covers. So, anyway, all right, you can move on now.
BPRD, Hell on Earth, cometh the hour.
You can move on, and so can you.
And so can I.
Thank you, Cole.
You're welcome.
And finally, Chris Casso, what do you got?
I read the first issue of the new Go-Go Power Rangers title, because there's a main Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, and now there's Go-Go Power Rangers. And
they're the ones with the boots, right?
Yeah. Minus 50 points from Gryffindor.
I'm going
to
be quiet.
And I'm not that much of a Power Ranger person, but I always kind of check in just to see how they're doing their stuff. And this takes place like moments after their first adventure. And it's engaging. The writer, Ryan Parrott, does a good job of, you know, spending time with the characters, establishing the mood, getting some action in there. So it's all very well done. I think fans will be entertained. But the real reason I'm here is because the art is by Dan Mora, who at the store is becoming like a fan favorite for us here.
Yeah, so Cole's making a face. He made the Klaus.
I was going to say, yeah.
Klaus, Grant Morrison.
Santa Claus comic.
He's also done the second and third volumes of Hexed, which is lesser known, but yeah.
And he's been doing a lot of like covers for Marvel and a little bit at DC, and like every time one of us sees him, one of those covers, and we don't necessarily know it's him, we're like, God, that's a really nice cover, and then we're like, it's Dan Mora.
Yeah, I'm
so
a big fan of his.
I think we want to see him be given like a core main title, like Justice League. I think would be fantastic. He's dynamic. He's got great compositions, and he's just a lot of fun.
So what you're saying is you want to see more of Mora.
I want to see more of Mora.
Sitting on that one.
And he makes me care about things I don't care about. And I think that's a pretty good skill run on its own.
Absolutely.
And cool. So, yeah, it's worth reading if you like a Power Rangers. But if you just want some good art, follow Dan Mora. Look him up online. Check out his gallery work. I think he's going to be a big name in the next couple years, hopefully.
Excellent.
Cool. All right. Go, go, Power Rangers. Thank you, Chris. And that is Book Report. And coming up is quiz time. But before we go, I want to tell you that the Perfect Bound podcast is brought to you by The Panel Jumper. See everything Cole Hornaday and I do at thepaneljumper.com. And by The Comics Dungeon here at 319 Northeast 45th Street in beautiful downtown Wallingford, or 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at comicsdungeon.com. You can like us on Facebook and subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or however you get your podcast at perfectboundpodcast.com. Send us an email, perfectboundpodcast@gmail.com. We should have named the show a much smaller, easier to say name. And send us quiz time questions.
You like to just find 130 episodes ago.
Well, yeah, okay, you got me there. But it's quiz time. Get your quiz hats on, everybody. This week the questions come to us from me, and because we talked about the Dark Tower, I am going to be giving you 5 questions on the Dark Tower series by Stephen King. Here are 5 questions about the book, thanks to mentalfloss.com for these questions. Number one, Stephen King said that the first book, The Gunslinger, was inspired by a poem by English poet Robert Browning. What was the name of the poem?
Child Roland to the Dark Tower came.
Correct.
Did I really get that right?
Yeah.
Wow.
Nice.
Not word for word, Cole Hornaday.
Wow.
Number two. In Wolves of the Kala, King pays tribute to another contemporary fantasy series with homing-like weapons called Sneetches, each of which is stamped with the serial number ending in HPJKR. What does HPJKR stand for?
Harry Potter, J.K. Rowling?
Yes, sir.
Oh, wow.
And of course, the Sneetch is an homage to the Quidditch Golden Snitch.
In Harry Potter.
All right, number three. Then this is a multiple choice question. King's slow progress on this series had a tendency to drive fans crazy. And Cole's raising his hand. He has stated that a couple of fans, one on death row, the other an elderly cancer patient, had written him asking how the series ended. King did not give them an answer because why? A. King never reveals the ending to anyone, not even to his family or close friends. Even for these extraordinary circumstances, he didn't feel he could trust them not to leak. B. King did mail them how it ended, but alas, he was too late, and out of respect for the deceased, the respective families mailed his letters back to him unopened. Or C. King himself did not know how it would end.
C. I'm going to say C.
It is C.
He didn't know where he was
going. King wrote in a foreword to Wizard and Glass, I would have given both of these folks what they wanted, a summary of Roland's further adventures, if I could have done, but alas, I couldn't. To know, I have to write. I once had an outline, but I lost it along the way. Number four. King is known for sharing characters among his many novels. One of these characters is Father Callahan, who first appeared in King's 1975 vampire novel Salem's Lot. In his appearance in Dark Tower, Father Callahan finds what in a Manhattan bookstore?
Harry Potter.
Nope.
Salem's Lot?
Yes, he finds a copy of Salem's Lot.
Multidimensional stuff going on.
And number five.
It's meta.
Yeah.
And finally, another character that has appeared in multiple King novels is the Man in Black himself, Randall Flagg. Name at least one other novel Flagg has appeared in. No, Chris, you take one. Cole already.
The Stand?
The Stand is one. Can anybody else name another?
Eyes of the Dragon?
Eyes of the Dragon is the only other one. And that is our quiz time, and that is our show. Thank you for listening, and we will see you next week.
Woo-hoo!